Hello, this is the Taxation Podcast. I'm Daniel Selwood, and before I get stuck into issue 4295 with our editor Mike here, I would just like to ask listeners to drop me a line on daniel.selwood with one L at lexisnexis.co.uk and let me know of anything you would like different or additional to this podcast, albeit a theme tune or a slightly different...
That could be extremely interesting, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you'd have to write it yourself, obviously, and then hand over all the...
You did realise, right, Daniel, that April the 1st is coming up sort of fairly soon, and, you know, the answers you may get could be quite interesting. But no, I think that'd be quite good.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's time we give it a little twiddle, and I think a theme tune would be a good idea. Anyway, moving on to lesser matters... We're going to talk about this week's issue. The first item from Jonathan Levy. Matthew Green, summarises the likely course of an HMRC criminal investigation. And the one thing that raised an eyebrow at is that there is mention of the Crown Prosecution Central Fraud Group who decide whether to go ahead with investigations. And how their sort of most commonly used weapon in their arsenal is the charge of cheating the public revenue, which holds a maximum penalty of life imprisonment. Not even Al Capone went down for life.
No, I mean, people don't go down for life, but they do go down for quite long terms. I mean, it is a sort of treated as a major offence, cheating the public revenue. It's a long-standing old offence. It's not a new one. What they're looking at is what happens when you get a criminal prosecution. And now, okay, most people won't deal with those very often, but we are all looking at the possibility, obviously, of the people who haven't come forward after the offshore disclosures, and potentially, you know, if there's a lot of money at stake, then there could well be prosecutions on those. And indeed, there's apparently a couple of people where prosecution looks imminent, so one to be aware of.
They're few and far between.
Absolutely. I mean, I think in a sense this is it's for the, you know, just to be aware in case of the absolutely unusual happening, but also just so that you can actually explain to a client what they're laying themselves open to if they don't come forward. I think really that's what it's there for. It's as a weapon to for our readers to say to their clients that you've got to come forward, because otherwise this is what happens.
You're risking. Yeah. It's a risk.
Absolutely.
Cranking it down a few now, we're talking about the correct headings on letters to the revenue, Pete's penny card. Still an important issue, and one that's probably likely to affect a lot more people.
And rather more than that, it's quite a good piece, this, because you get two for the price of one. You get an article about VAT and property and what happens in a very practical situation where someone did have commercial leases and they're changing them to residential, but also how to make sure that you get the right answer from the VAT office, because Peter wrote in to written inquiries, I think it was, asking for a clearance, and was told that he should have headed it clearance application, and if he had, then he'd have got it quicker. So the practical things that you need to know.
It was a right palaver.
It was a right palaver. I mean, it's the sort of thing which, you know, the revenue come back and say, oh, no, what you should have done is this. Well, how was I supposed to know that what I should have done was that? You know, you don't make it clear that that's what I've got to do.
So, lessons learned.
And it comes back, of course, to the whole right to a reply. Had they been dealing with Post on a relatively sensible basis, it wouldn't have been a problem in the first place.
That's our right to reply campaign. You can find out more about that on the website.
Just thought I'd drop that in.
Third... Heidi Poon. Mm-hmm. To tax or not to tax? That is a question for termination payments.
Yeah, always a problem, termination payments. The revenue used to have some strange ideas about these, that if you had a practice of making payments in lieu of notice, then that overrode your contract. They have backed down from that, but it is always still a problem to decide whether or not something is a termination payment or whether it is just a payment that's come out of the contract. And the difference, of course, is whether or not you can get that £30,000 tax-free. So it's a substantial saving if you get it right. Substantial problem if you get it wrong.
You see a lot of tax cases regarding this?
There have been quite a few. Certainly, she goes into Goldberg, one of the more recent ones, in some detail. But I suspect it comes up in practice an awful lot more than it comes up in cases, if you know what I mean. It happens an awful lot in practice. And it's one of those ones that you can quite easily get very wrong.
Finally, Mike Sexton asks, are you foxed by foreign currency accounts and share purchases? Well, I know I am.
Yeah, well, so am I, really. I mean, well, so is everybody. If, as he says, it's one of these things where we don't do it this way. If you actually follow the real rules, it could get absolutely appalling. Even if you follow the rules that the revenue want you to follow, it's still pretty bad. And all we're looking at is a situation where someone's got a foreign currency bank account and they buy foreign shares. And then they sell the foreign shares and you get money back into the foreign currency bank account. And the trouble is you've got two gains. You've got a gain on the shares and you've got a gain on the currency. And it's that combination of the two which is completely counter to what you would think you should be doing.
So if you don't follow the rules, what do you do? Make up your own rules or follow a third way?
Following a third way, Grasshopper. I mean, what a lot of people have been thinking is, okay, I'm buying shares in dollars. All I do is work out, you know, what the dollars were when I bought them, what the dollars were when I sold them. It's not as simple as that because, you, as I say, you're buying and selling currency as well as buying and selling shares. So, yeah, you do need to look at both of those things, the fact that you've got a foreign currency bank account and the fact that you've got foreign currency assets, and look at the two together.
Can we tell readers that Mike comes up with the perfect answer, or is it still just sort of advice on the best way?
No, I mean, he does give the right answer. And I think he explains the things that you do have to do and the things that you don't have to do. So that's, you know, in accordance with revenue guidance, which is good news.
Great stuff. And that's it then for this week. Look out for my article as usual. It's about your Facebook page this week. Probably more useful than you might think, so check out.
Famous last words.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Mike, and thanks for downloading this broadcast, and we hope you'll do it again next week. Cheers.
Cheers now.